What's going on, DTC friends and family? I'm here to talk to you about Dynasty Leagues, but not in the way that I usually do. No, we're not talking about the Dynasty Diagnostic. We are talking about Dynasty Owners. The best fantasy football leagues are those where every owner consistently pays attention, responds to trade offers, changes their lineup, and is always looking to improve their team. We've all been in leagues where non-active owners absolutely kill the vibe, and you don't get any enjoyment from actually participating in that league, win or lose. These aren't one of those. This is no off-season for the owners on Dynasty Owner. That's who you're challenging yourself when it comes to Dynasty Owner. Other elite fantasy football players are committed to competing and are vetted before they're even placed in Dynasty Owner leagues. It's the only football platform with a patent game using actual NFL salaries and contracts. Combine this with a salary cap, trading options, advanced team rosters, and devoted and elite owners willing to compete against you, and you're faced with the same decisions that NFL owners and general managers must make on a day-to-day basis. If you are ready to take the leap, to take the next step, and to take on the absolute creme de la creme of Dynasty gamers, then don't miss out. We have an amazing mobile app that will be out on iOS and Android in May, just in time to start filling up your draft with all the rookies being added to the player pool. Just waitlist at www.dynastyowner.com so you don't miss out when new leagues open.
Aton and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. Bowl, all bowl, but no bowl. They just roll in a roll that I'm told. Cop a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks. Yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks. Yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seat? Yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this? Is it that? Is it picks? Is it bad? Do I even have a chance? Do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the dynasty now. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Nah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty
Diagnostic, Gnostic, Gnostic.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. Tune in every week for a thorough inspection of the Dynasty landscape to learn how recent news affects your roster and to gather strategic tips and tricks to give your squad that turbocharged boost it needs. Please welcome your head technicians, Eitan Mosia and Sam Lane.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to the shop. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. That's right. You are hearing a different voice on the intro. I am Sam Stompy Lane. Unfortunately, Eitan is a little under the weather and won't be able to join me today. So get better, Eitan. But I will, however, be joined by a guy that has come to be known as a quote-unquote QB guru. He seemingly does everything from writing for Inside the Pylon and Touchdown Wire to writing and breaking down film for Matt Waldman's RSP, to hosting podcasts like The Sco Show on SB Nation and guessing on all the podcasts because I looked his name up and it just popped up with all the podcasts. If that didn't give it away, my guess is none other than Mark Schofield. Mark, how is it going? How are you holding up over these last 2 months?
Sam Stompy, it's great to be with you. And look, we're now in month three here of this sort of lockdown, quarantine, stay home type world. I'm here in Maryland, in Montgomery County, Maryland, where actually there are two counties in Maryland, Montgomery County and Prince George's County, which are still seeing cases sort of spike. So we're basically like school's out for the year. Like we're still at home. It's, for me, it hasn't been much of an adjustment because I work from home. Like, this is all just, you know, usual routine for me. But for my wife, you know, who's now having to work from home, for the kids, obviously, it's a massive adjustment. We're lucky that the like virtual learning through the kids' school has been good. The teachers have been doing a great job. They're keeping them engaged. Like my son, he's in third grade. They've been doing plays and stuff via Zoom, which is kind of funny. And we've got some neighbors who have kids around, you know, my children's age. So they can play in the street, they can ride bikes, they can do some stuff. So they're not completely going stir crazy. So we're getting by. But how about you, man? How are you holding up?
I'm doing okay. The funny thing is, and I think this is probably just true for most fantasy analysts at this point, is this didn't really change much of our lives. I mean, we do our work thing over here. We go home and do our fantasy football thing. So this really hasn't changed much for me. Finally got my hair cut though today.
Right.
Oh my God.
Looks good.
Appreciate it, man. But yeah, I mean, we put in a garden. So we're kind of thriving. Yeah. I've had to go to work every once in a while, but I work in a lab and it's only one person in the lab at a time. So pretty easy getting some days off too as well. So I can't complain. I'm not going to say good things about this whole situation because I get it. But I'm kind of thriving in the situation. So
yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where like, look, it's not easy. And, you know, I understand why people are sort of getting antsy. I mean, look, the weather's nice. You want to get out. But you just got to kind of think long term here. I mean, I was sort of happy to see Nick Saban do that little PSA about wearing a mask because, look, we all want to see football in the fall.
Yeah.
And, you know, the best thing we can do is sort of stay safe, you know, do the things we need to do here now to make sure we get that.
So I we're seeing a lot of news coming out about the NHL starting their playoffs, the MLB in negotiations with the Players Association. That didn't go well, at least on day one of the week. And then we've had the NBA talking about starting to play at the Wild World of Sports and at Disney. But do you think there's a possibility we don't see any sports the rest of 20? I guess I should say that because hockey is playing, but do we not see football, or is it just changed drastically from what we're used to?
I mean, I think we'll see football. I think we'll see professional football. And it might be different. You know, there might be, you know, no fans allowed to start, then they might sort of gradually work in, say, 25% capacity. Then, you know, if we get closer to like Thanksgiving and, you know, we're not seeing a huge second wave or anything like that, maybe to 50 and maybe to 100% by the end of the year, they'll get pro football back. College is a different sort of creature altogether. You know, like we're seeing with baseball, you have players' unions. And so there are ways to protect the athletes via the union. There's not a similar mechanism in the college game. And so a lot of that comes down to the individual universities and their presidents. For example, we just saw University of Michigan, you know, their president, who's an immunologist by trade, basically said, look, we're not going to have sports in the fall if we can't have students on campus. And so it might be a situation where we see half of the college teams play. Maybe it's a scenario where we get sort of a spring season with the teams that couldn't go in the fall, then playing in the spring. I mean, there are ways you could do that. And obviously you'd have split champions and things like that. But I think the colleges want football at some point, because if they can't get it done, then you're going to see, like we're already seeing in some schools, shutter in other programs like track, cross country, baseball, softball. Like you look at any sort of college athletic system, football is the moneymaker. And if you can't have that, you can't support the rest of the programs. So the schools want to get football back. It's just a matter of, can they do it safely, and can they do it while protecting the students and the student athletes?
I mean, I hope you're right in terms of the NFL. I hope you're wrong in terms of the NCAA. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully everybody's healthy by September, and then we don't have to worry about anything.
Exactly.
And we need some semblance of sports. Holy cow.
Because look, man, the timeline is brutal right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we can be honest. The Twitter timeline is bad. I mean, you know, we're watching marble racing. You know, we watched The Last Dance together as a Twitter family. But, like, we're starved for sports. We need it. We need that right now.
All right. So I guess the first part of this, I kind of want listeners to just get to know you a little bit. So starting out, tell us about what being a lawyer was like. I mean, you have on your Twitter experience being an insurance attorney, which is, I mean, it's just a great joke to me because everybody knows who you are that's following you. But it's, well, I don't write for Inside the Pylon or anything. It's fine.
Well, I actually just changed that, Stompy, because I did a series of videos for the Matt Waldman RSP on Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm doing like my summer scouting is part 2021 quarterbacks for the draft and part current NFL quarterbacks. I always think it's a good exercise to rewatch current players at various positions to see what works and what doesn't. And I've started off with Jimmy Garoppolo and I did a series and a piece for Matt's site, you know, three different videos on footwork and Jimmy Garoppolo. And it got picked up by Niners Nation. And somebody posted, one of the writers over there, a screenshot of the comments. And it was basically to the effect of, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know what I'm doing. And the only experience I have is as an insurance defense attorney, which I thought was just like the perfect way to update my Twitter profile. So that's why I changed it. That's what everybody else was, you know, try to enjoy a relaxing Memorial Day and, you know, maybe taking some time to think about the true meaning of the day. I'm changing my Twitter profile in response to basically some troll comments. So, you know, I thought that was necessary. But, you know, to the point of the question, look, I was a bad lawyer. I mean, that's sort of the root of all of this. I practiced for 10 years here in the D.C. area. At the end of my time, I was doing insurance malpractice defense. I was bad at it. I struggled with it. If you remember Matt Harmon, he had that Backyard Banter podcast a couple of years ago. And I was one of the people that came on like the 10th episode or something like that. I think Liz Loza was the episode before mine. And I talked about how, look, I was a basket case. Like I was struggling with anxiety, depression, like you name it, I had it, you know, you name it, medication, self-medication, therapy, all of that stuff. None of it was really working. And I just realized I got to the point where I needed to do something different. And I remember the moment that sort of put me over the edge. It was one of those nights, you know, during the work week where, you know, my wife, who's also a lawyer, who's actually very good at it, is pregnant with our second child. We have our first, Owen, who's, you know, a two at the time. And we have that hour between, you know, getting him from daycare and having dinner before we have to get him ready for bed where we can actually play with him. And so my wife, who's, again, pregnant, lawyer, on the floor with Owen, crawling around with him, like playing, giggling. And Stompy, I'm sitting on the couch staring at my phone because I'm like terrified that I might get an email about a case that I'm working on. Not that I'm expecting one. It's not a situation where somebody said, yeah, I'm going to look this over and email you in an hour. It's just a hypothetical in my mind that I might get an email. And so I'm staring 3 feet in front of my face and ignoring my actual life. The stuff that matters, like 6 feet beyond that. And so I just caught myself in that moment. I'm like, I got to do something different. So what did I do? I started writing about football. Now what happens? I'll be staring at my phone, looking at Twitter while, you know, the kids are playing and stuff. So I try not to do that as much, but that's really what happened. I realized that it wasn't for me. And I, you know, started Inside the Pylon with some people I knew from a different Red Sox message board, Sons of Sam Horn. None of us really had a journalism background. We came from different walks of life, finance, you know, IT. Didn't know what we were getting into, but it sort of grew from there. And I've been lucky that people like Matt Waldman, people like Doug Farrar have, you know, seen the work and given me a chance to handle more responsibility, take on new projects to the point where now what started out as something to do when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, it's become a career and I can, you know, make money doing this and make it a full-time job. And so, you know, being a lawyer was not for me. You know, if there's somebody that's listening that is a lawyer, maybe it is for you. Kudos on that. You know, I've had other people that are practicing attorneys reach out and pick my brain on how to get out and do what I do or do something similar. And I get it. It's not for everybody. And so, you know, I just came to the realization that it wasn't for me mentally the best thing. And I'm glad that I made the change when I did, because I was going down a dark road and I've been open about that. Like this would have ended badly for me if I didn't make that change when I did.
I was in a similar situation. I didn't obviously go from being a lawyer to fantasy football, but I was working as a chemical engineer at a processing plant. And I just, one day it clicked for me. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't be that type of engineer. I need to get back into my science background. And luckily I was able to find a job in a lab in St. Louis, and I've been a lot happier since. But like, I mean, fantasy football has turned from a distraction for me in my life to something that like I care about, and I kind of consider a second career at this point. So definite.
You only get one crack at life, right?
Right.
And there's, it took me forever to realize that there's no sense in going through it miserable. Like, it's just not worth it. And look, it's easy. And I know that I'm in a very good position because, look, I had a wife that was doing well. So I had the freedom and the opportunity to sort of say, look, I need to do something else, and I'm not going to be making money for a while, but it's going to be okay. I'll go back and do something else if I have to, but I got to do this. And I had a partner that understood that. I had family members that understood that. And, Matt Waldman and I did a show on this, like in January, talking about, trying to get this, different kind of career going. You're going to need that buy-in from other people. And if I didn't have that, I wouldn't be able to do it. So I'm extremely lucky in that sense. But no, it is true that you just get sort of one shot at all life, and you've got to try to do what you can to make it okay, to make it enjoyable, to make it worthwhile in, going through life, a career, a job, whatever. And if you aren't enjoying it, and if it's causing you misery and heartache and strife, try to take some steps to rectify that. Reach out to people. That's what I did. I reached out to people. So like I always say, look, my DMs are open. I might not be able to help you. I might just be able to make you laugh by making fun of myself, which I seem to do on a daily basis, but maybe that's what you need. And so listen, the DMs, I'm your school for, they're always open.
See, I say we're, and I'm not even on the same level as Mark Schofield, but those people, those fantasy analysts are normal people too. So you can talk to us. Again, not on the same level as Mark Schofield. I'm very lucky to talk to Mark Schofield.
Stop it.
So, I mean, you've already kind of answered how you got involved in fantasy football. So let's go to what you are kind of known for and with your specialization. Why QBs?
I started playing the position at 10. Okay. I remember the first year I tried out for Pop Warner football. I really wanted to be a quarterback, but they did this drill when I was 9 years old where they had you run out for a pass pattern and then throw the ball back. And I was just kind of like, look, I didn't want to hurt the coach. So I lobbed the ball back. So they made me a running back. I was like, no, I didn't want to do this. So the next year I made sure that when we did that drill, I was going to throw it back hard. And then they let me play quarterback. And I was a quarterback, started at 10, all the way into college. I played 1 year of quarterback / wide receiver as a sophomore, then moved back to quarterback full time. I found along the way, there's that old saying about, catchers, particularly backup catchers in baseball, they make great managers. Because they have to know the game. Backup quarterback is kind of the same thing, right? Like, I was not good. Like, just get that out up front. Like, there are people like Jordan Reed from the Draft Network, for example. Like, he was a very good college quarterback. Like, set school records, Division I guy. Like, he was legit. Like, coaches the position. I was a Division III NESCAC backup quarterback, which is non-scholarship, which is like New England Small College Athletic Conference. Like, this is the worst conference in all of college football, Division I, FCS, FBS, on down the line. Like, Division III non-scholarship, okay? And I was the worst backup quarterback in that conference. So I am proud to admit I was the worst backup quarterback in all of college football, like, from 1997 to 1999. Like, that was me. And I'll wear that proudly. But what I did do was learn the position. Like, when I wasn't playing, I learned it. I learned how to break down film. I learned how to, diagnose and decipher defenses on film, because I couldn't do it when I was playing, which is why I was on the sidelines, but I could spot it on film. And so, when I started writing, and even before that, like when I was just watching the game, like when my playing days were over, I'd be able to, like, in the middle of a play, like, oh yeah, they're switching from cover one to cover two or whatever, and talk about that while it was happening. And so it was just easy to then start writing about it. I mean, Inside the Pylon, like I said, it grew out of a Red Sox message board. And a lot of the stuff you see me doing now, I was doing it like 8 years ago, just in a message board form. Right. Like, I would break down Patriots games and break down all their passing plays and say, oh, this is what was happening. And it was just an easy thing to do. As I've gone on, I've tried to broaden the horizons a bit. But I've always thought that, like, you know, write what you know, write what you love, analyze what you love. Like, there are people that know defensive linemen. There are people that know offensive line. Like, I'm not going to wade into a debate on offensive line Twitter. Like, Duke Mannyweather will come over, rip my arms off, and beat me. Like, I'm not going to do that. Like, there are smarter people for different positions.
Right.
Like, I'll stay in my quarterback lane. I'll wade into the other stuff. You know, but I'm not going to go out too out on a far out on a limb over there. But I feel comfortable talking about quarterbacks. I study the position now. I read the position now. I go to clinics about the position now. So I constantly try to learn more about it. But it's like the position I played is where I'm most comfortable. And it's where I think it actually can make a little bit of sense.
Yeah, I was a pitcher for baseball. I actually got recruited as a pitcher for college. But beyond the point. So that's why I enjoy baseball a lot and understand, because I on a pitch to pitch basis, most people aren't going to really understand all the nuance that's involved in pitching. But for me, I'm just like, well, yeah, okay, he's pitching outside three times in a row. Watch, he's going to be high and tight.
Yeah,
it's an art to me. So I definitely understand that. And finally, my final get to know you question: how do you have so much time for FF activities, so much room for activities?
Well, I always say on my show, the SCO show, and sometimes even on the QB Factory, which I co-host Michael Kiss over on Bleeding Green Radio, that if you want to sort of get a sense of what a player might be, how a player might be used in the season ahead, in the weeks ahead, you have to have your finger on the pulse of the fantasy football community. Because you know, we might get into, say, August, and we're talking about Sony Michel versus Damian Harris in the backfield. But starting in May, you've got Josh Norris and Sigmund Bloom and Matt Waldman, like, breaking down, you know, press conference clips and things like that. Like, the fantasy football community is pretty far ahead of the curve on a lot of things when it comes to player usage, guys that might make rosters, guys that might see the field. I mean, Frank Reich was given a Zoom press conference today, Tuesday, talking about Paris Campbell in the slot. And I just saw before we went on,
me too,
Evan Silva and Sigmund Bloom talking about they're going to be 11 personnel with Pittman and T.Y. Hilton on the outside. Campbell in the slot, he's going to see more touches as a result, more targets as a result. Like, you have to sort of have your fingertips in the fantasy community if you want to, even if you don't play fantasy, if you just want to know how your team's going to be. So that's part of it. But the other thing is, look, I've met so many, either in person or via a setting like this, a phone call, StreamYard like this, so many smart people through the fantasy community. And there are so many great people in the fantasy football world doing great work that, you know, I'm honored when they want me to come on and yap for 45 minutes about quarterbacks. Like, I'm blown away that people would want me, you know, to talk about it. And there are so many people, whether it's Dynasty, Superflex, you know, deep dynasty stuff, even, you know, redraft leagues, that do such great work. And remember, the main start I got was basically in a fantasy realm with Matt Waldman when he had me on to talk, do an RSP film room on Carson Wentz, you know, back in August of 2016. And so 2015, actually. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the world of the fantasy football community, I mean, we're getting geared up for, you know, Scott Fishbowl 10. I can't wait. Can't wait to be on this SFB Podathon. You know, be my third or fourth year in a row on that with Sal and the guys. It's just a great community. And, you know, the fantasy football community is a prime example of just that idea that you just ask, right? If you want to break in, if you want to start doing work, just ask somebody for help, ask somebody to listen to your show or, you know, read an article you wrote. Everybody in there, the men and women in the fantasy football world, are so welcoming, you know, by and large, that, yeah, anytime a fantasy show reaches out, I'm like, yeah, sure, absolutely.
I mean, this entire industry, whether it be draft Twitter or film Twitter, and I mean, I'm sure there's an analytical Twitter, but anybody associated with the NFL right now in fantasy football, I've found has been extremely friendly. Sure, you have your tiffs and stuff online, but in general, this is one of the friendliest communities I've ever been a part of, and I'm happy to say that some of these guys are my closest friends at this point. Yeah. I mean, so I guess with that and with your reputation on QBs, let's get started on our 5-point inspection. How are we feeling about the rookie landing spots?
You know, I think for the most part, you know, take the guys picked early. You know, I feel fine about Burrow. You know, I would have felt fine wherever Burrow ended up. Pretty much as clean as it gets at the quarterback position. I mean, does he have the best arm in this group? No. Does he have, you know, the best record of handling pressure? I'd say no, because there are times when he maybe, you know, runs into sacks and things like that. But I think, look, by and large, he's going to be fine wherever he ended up. And I do think like Zach Taylor's offense is going to be pretty ideal for him. You know, a lot of space and concepts, a lot of time and a rhythm type throws. You know, if he gets AJ Green back, that will give him that vertical element that I think is going to be a big part of what can make that offense even better. And so I'm fine with Burrow. Look, I don't have any concerns there. When it comes to Tua, I think that's another ideal landing spot. You're talking about Chan Gailey coming back, you know, the godfather of the pro spread in a sense. That's what they're going to be running. That's what he's used to running. You look at what he was doing under Steve Sarkisian at Alabama. So I don't have any concerns with those two guys. You know, Herbert's a bit of a different question. Part of it is how quickly is he going to see the field? That's issue number one. I think stylistically, the fit makes sense in that we expect that to be a downfield offense. We expect that to be a sort of a vertical passing game. And, you know, he's sort of got the arm to do that. I sort of question the ability to throw the middle of the field. But I think, look, if you're talking deep shot plays and not between the hashes at the 10, 15-yard range, like we expect that offense to have, then it should be okay. The main question I have there, though, is you're talking about a new offensive coordinator who was an interim OC last year, but now it's his first time as an OC full-time. There's no sort of track record of quarterback development, right? Like he hasn't done it before. And so you sort of wonder, is he going to be able to do it right? You know, and maybe he is, but it's just more of a question mark. So, you know, Herbert, I'm a little sketchy on. Jordan Love, I mean, two things can be true. That this is the best possible place for Jordan Love and that he won't have to play right away. Matt LaFleur is going to do things schematically to help him. They seem to be trending in a, you know, 21-12 personnel, sort of like what Kyle Shanahan's doing. So they're going to want to throw out a heavy sets, throw off a play action. Those will all be good things for Jordan Love, the quarterback. But Jordan Love, the draft pick, doesn't help Green Bay in 2020. Like those two things can be equally true. And so I think the fit is good for Jordan Love. If you're, you know, a deep Debbie, deep dynasty type player, like, yeah, get yourself some Jordan Love shares because this is a great opportunity for him. If you're a Packers fan who's hoping to see a Super Bowl this year, you might not be happy with the pick. And so that's how you sort of look at those. As we get into the deeper guys, look, I hated the Jalen Hurts pick immediately.
Oh, I did too.
I just despised it out of the gate. Like, I remember I hopped, Mike Kist and I, we hopped on Instagram. We did an Instagram live right after the pick, and we were just screaming. We were just screaming. And the comments were just filled with expletives. The more I sort of stepped away from that, and in particular, when their entire draft was done, I started to see how it could make sense. Because it does seem like Philadelphia is moving from the sort of Doug Peterson branch off the Andy Reid coaching tree, West Coast offense, which is just a bad fit for Jalen Hurts. Like he was 3.08 seconds, you know, snap to throw last year. That was the slowest out of all of the draft quarterbacks. It would have been the slowest in the NFL. He's not built for that offense. But they had Jalen Reagor, Marquise Goodwin, John Hightower, Quez Watkins. They've said it. They want to be a more vertical offense. They want to be a more downfield offense. I think stylistically that kind of fits Jalen Hurts better. And so if they are moving in that direction offensively, it could fit. You know, it could work. Like, I've softened on it a bit. I still – this is a team that, again, they needed wide receivers, they needed linebackers, they needed other positions. It doesn't make sense to me. But I could see it working in the long run. I'm still not a huge fan of it, but it's making a little bit more sense. I like Eason. I think that's a great spot for him. Again, similar to Love, won't have to play right away. You've got a guy in Frank Reich that has done it. He was part of the team that helped once. He was in that room. And so I think that makes sense. As we get really deep, I like Cole McDonald.
Yeah,
I love Cole McDonald, number one. So, I mean, let's get that out up front. Number two, he's going to be fun. If we get a full four-game preseason slate, man, that second half of that first week one preseason game where he's in there and he throws like three touchdowns and three picks, that's going to make for fantastic watching. Let's just say that. But look, it's Ryan Tannehill and Cole McDonald right now. And so there's an opportunity there for him to sort of win a backup job. And who knows, you know, Tannehill had a great year last year, elite by almost any metric you want to look at, you know, completion percentage above expectation, adjusted net yards per attempt, whatever you want to look at. Tannehill was elite. Can he replicate it? We hope so, but maybe not. Another situation I like is Nate Stanley in Minnesota, because I think he's sort of a Kirk Cousins type quarterback, number one. And you look at the rest of that quarterback room, you know, they've got, I think it's Logan Woodside, you know, who, yeah, he was in the AAF or whatever, but I don't think he's sort of winning the job there. The other backup, I'm pulling it up right now. Sean Mannen. Oh, it's Jake Browning and Sean Mannen. Like, those are the other two quarterbacks on the roster. Jake Browning, arm strength is a serious issue. And Sean Mannen, nobody, I don't think anybody really likes him. You know, nobody thinks he's sort of a long-term answer at that position. And so Nate Stanley is in a situation where I think he could at least make this roster, maybe even win that backup job. And, you know, Kirk Cousins, the money, yeah, they just, you know, extended him and stuff. But maybe there's an opportunity down the road. So, again, deeper dynasty leagues, Nate Stanley's a guy to watch.
So, I guess on J-Lo, first and foremost, I'm on the same boat as you when it came to Jalen Hurts. I don't know what that means for Carson Wentz, and that's something we probably should discuss here as well. But I was really talking about the Eagles. I was really hoping he would land with Frank Reich, where – I mean, we've seen Frank Reich, like you said, help with Carson Wentz, help develop Carson Wentz, but also shift that offense to a lot more RPO or what Carson was playing in college. And when you have one of the best offensive lines in the game in the Colts, now I don't know about pass or pass blocking versus run blocking, but you give Jalen Hurts a year, he has the Konami code, the running ability, which we know can be, I mean, a factor right away. We saw it with Lamar Jackson in his rookie season. And I was just hoping that he would land with a coach who I view as very creative, can help develop a quarterback, maybe not so much in terms of what like Carson Wentz did. Carson Wentz is obviously a bigger guy that runs. Jalen Hurts runs a lot more, but could help develop him into a competent passer that is a lethal weapon. So that was where I wanted him to land. But what does that landing spot mean for Carson Wentz after his – is it rookie deal? No, his rookie deal is already up.
He's on his second deal now. Benjamin Solak, who covers the Eagles for BGN, also works over the Draft Network. He had a great piece last year sort of about the duality of Carson Wentz. And basically the argument is part of what makes Carson Wentz great, you know, his willingness to extend plays, his fearlessness in the pocket, his ability to play to the whistle and to fight for every possibility on a given snap is going to be what ends his career prematurely. Like, we can see that coming. And I remember, I mentioned doing that RSP film one with Matt Walden back in August of 15. We watched his junior year, that national championship game against Illinois State. And he had this great play where he had a run, ran somebody over, and we gave it the old major league treatment. That was fantastic. Don't ever do it again, you know, because you won't last in the National Football League. But that's what's made him fun to watch. That's what's made him sort of a leader, you know, in that locker room, is his willingness to put himself on the line. You think about, you know, how he got hurt a couple of years ago when they won the Super Bowl. He was diving into the end zone trying to score a touchdown against the Rams. I mean, he's willing to put his body on the line, but it's going to potentially end his career sooner than we hope. You know, we hope he doesn't go the Andrew Luck route, but that possibility is there. And I think Philadelphia is cognizant of that fact as an organization. They realize who he is, and they're not going to be able to stop him being that guy. So they have to sort of make sure they've got a viable option behind him. And another thing about the Hurts selection is, look, we know why teams like Jalen Hurts, right? They saw the Alabama situation. What does he do? He stays. He loses the job. He stays. He helps Tua. He contributes any way he can. Then he goes to Oklahoma as the grad transfer, wins the job, becomes a leader, all that stuff. Look, he's a tough, confident, mentally strong kid. You're going to need to be that if you're going to walk into this locker room right now and into a city that, let's face it, the second this pick was made, there were people on WIP in Philadelphia saying the Carson Wentz era is over. It's done.
Like, yep.
It's over. Like, so this is a bad situation, but they understand who Jalen Hurts is as a person. And so, you know, I think it does, you know, Stompy, tell us a little bit about Carson Wentz. I don't think it's a situation where he's going to lose the job to Jalen Hurts or anything like that. But I think it is a recognition of the fact that his play style might make it likely, as much as we might hate it, for him to suffer an injury again.
Yeah, and his contract, I believe he has zero money guaranteed after 2021, which gives Jalen Hurts, if Wentz stays healthy, gives him 2 years to develop as the passing quarterback that we've seen glimpses of. He definitely got better from Alabama to Oklahoma in terms of being a passer. Right. Still needs a lot of seasoning to become a competent enough passer that he can be a starting quarterback and a winning quarterback in the NFL. Okay. All right. So moving on here, as I lost my, there we are, my show sheet. On that topic of Jalen Hurts, Carson Wentz, we talked about Lamar Jackson. We've seen Kyler Murray have let's be real, fantastic rookie season. Are you having to adjust your analysis as the league starts to shift to more RPO and more of the running quarterback or the dual threat quarterback?
You know, it's not so much that you adjust the analysis, you sort of adjust how you weigh the traits. And, you know, athleticism, you know, you might want to put more of an emphasis on that. If somebody can bring that athletic ability to the table, you see the way the league is trending. You know, it's a reason why, you know, a guy like Nate Stanley fell down boards. I mean, he's your classic sort of battleship type quarterback. You know, if he was coming out, it's say 1995, Nate Stanley, even with the numbers he was putting up the past couple of years at Iowa, might have been a day two pick, maybe even late first round. You know, but the league is trending in a different direction. And so, you know, if you have that athletic ability, teams are going to want that. Teams are going to cover that for a number of reasons. One, it's a reason why you might win a job. But two, it's a reason why even in the late rounds, you might stick on a roster. Like Jamar Smith, for example, the kid from Louisiana Tech, who's now a UDFA with the Patriots. He might stick on that roster because you need somebody. Now, here are some of the quarterbacks on the Patriots schedule. Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Josh Allen. Like, that's a pretty much murderer's row of athletic quarterbacks. Like, you need somebody that's going to give you that look in practice. Is Brian Hoyer going to do that? Is Brian Lewerke, the other UDFA quarterback, going to do that? No. And so even if you're, you know, not going to be looked at as the starter, having that athleticism might get you onto a roster, onto a practice squad, and give you that chance to A, mimic the opposing quarterback during practice, but B, learn the position so you can stick in the National Football League. And so I think you have to sort of weigh the athleticism part properly. And instead of like the RPOs, it's still process and speed. You know, it's just different. You know, a lot of people tend to, like, they say, oh, well, RPOs, you're not making reads. Well, you still are. You know, the prime example that I use is take the Mills concept, right? It's a post, it's a dig combination. You're trying to get that high low against the free safety. Well, what's an RPO? You're high low on a different defender. It's a linebacker now. You're reading him. If you show the handoff and he crashes, you throw it. If he stays deep, you hand it off. It's you're still reading and reacting to a defender on a lot of these. So it's still that process and stuff, process speed that you're looking at. It's just different. It's not what we're used to seeing. It's not, you know, nice and easy and clean. Like, oh, he's looking at the dig to the post, to the curl, to the comeback. It's different, but you still have to read a defense, decipher what they're doing, and make a decision based off of it.
So I guess to go along with that, we've seen the success of late with Josh Allen, who, I mean, while he improved as a passer, still was sub 60% completion percentage. Lamar Jackson wasn't thought of as the best passer, though if you read Matt Waldman, then you would know better. Kyler Murray having the success he did last year, are we not or should we be considering or taking less consideration into their passing ability? And I know that sounds kind of weird, but like, I guess the for instance here is Jalen Hurts. A lot of people thought he's not startable in the NFL as a QB. I don't think he's that bad of a passer, but that's kind of the how people view Jalen Hurts as not a good passer, but an extremely good athlete. So I guess how do you take that into consideration with like adjusting your ranks or whatever? So where would Jalen Hurts have ranked maybe 10 years ago versus where he should be ranked today?
Right. I mean, I think 10 years ago, Jalen Hurts is probably, you know, really asked to consider a position switch.
He's Tim Tebow.
I think that's exactly right, Stompy. He's Tim Tebow. I think, you know, it gets us to that what can he do question, right? You know, a lot of times, and NFL teams do this, you know, people on the outside like myself, sometimes we fall into this trap. We sometimes focus on so much what guys can't do, right? You know, oh, he can't do this. Let's take Lamar Jackson. He can't throw the deep out route, right? He can't throw that, you know, comeback route along the right sideline from the left hash mark. Okay, so he can't do that. Don't ask him to. Tell me what he can do. He can throw almost any other route on the field. He can certainly beat you with his legs as well. He can do a bunch of different things that will make him impossible to defend. And so it's just we have to sort of reframe that question. It sort of asks, you know, what can these guys do? With Jalen Hurts, look, he can throw the deep ball very well. Like I thought, you know, you mentioned Indianapolis as an example, and that's a very good one. I thought Tampa Bay might have been a destination in that Bruce Arians system because, you know, you look at the snap to throw time on him, you look at the vertical offense, you look at some of the deep downfield throws he had at Oklahoma. That's a situation where I think he could excel. And so, you know, find what these guys can do and then figure out if that's going to work in the National Football League. And another example was Deshaun Watson. A lot of people said, oh, lots of interceptions out beside the sideline. When that, I mean, I'm old enough to remember Ball Velocity Day, 2017. Yep. I was standing in my kitchen and that 49 miles per hour number dropped and I let fly some expletives in front of my family I'm not proud of. I knew what was going to happen. People were going to lose their minds. Oh, that's it. He can't. He's 49 miles per hour. He can't throw the football, you know, fast enough with enough velocity to have success in the National Football League. Well, don't ask him to throw deep out routes. Like when you watched him at Clemson, those out routes or corner routes, he had to put some touch on them. Okay, ask him to do that. He's one of the by a percentage of his throws. He's consistently been one of the top downfield throwers in the league. He's just using some touch on it. Like find what the guys can do. Like, I think that's the way to sort of answer that question. Tell me what these guys can do. And if that can work in the National Football League, great. If it can't, there's your answer.
Absolutely. And that's a nice segue into my next question. With second-year QBs like Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes winning the MVP the last two seasons, which second-year QB has the best chance at repeating the trend? I mean, now we have, what, four guys that are – going to be starting the season? Five, because you can't forget Jarrett Stidham.
Yeah, and I wouldn't put Stidham on that list as much as, you know, the Patriots fan inside me would want to put him on this list. I can't go there right now. I think there are two. You know, I don't want to go Daniel Jones. I don't want to go Dwayne Haskins. Like, you know, I'm a believer in both of them now, much to my surprise about Daniel Jones. I was not high on him at all. But I think, look, he's surpassed expectations. Haskins, I think, was better down the stretch than I think he was given credit for. I've written about that. Bryce Rossler at Sports Info Solutions had a great piece out today on that as well, which you should check out. But I think it comes down to Locke and Murray. And I think for basically the same reasons. Look, you're talking about Denver, a team that's going to run a lot of 11 personnel. Now what do they have at 11 personnel? Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler. Noah Fant to tight end, and a combination of Melvin Gordon and Phillip Lindsay at running back. Like, that's a pretty good 11 personnel package. And yeah, you're asking for some production from two rookie wide receivers, but wide receiver is a spot where rookies can contribute quickly, much quicker than tight end, perhaps much quicker than quarterback. And so he's going to have a nice situation, a nice, you know, supporting cast around him. And then, man, Arizona, I mean, come on. You're a 10 personnel team. You're going to have Larry Fitzgerald, Christian Kirk, DeAndre Hopkins, and then Keyshawn Johnson or Andy Isabella as that fourth wide receiver with Kenyon Drake at the running back spot. Like, that's a very good group as well. And Murray, yeah, he had some mistakes. Yeah, he took a ton of sacks, invited a lot of pressure. But if there's a guy that I'm going to bet on having that year two leap, it's Kyler Murray. Like, I think he showed last year he belonged. And now in year two, with the addition of DeAndre Hopkins, like one of the top five receivers in the game, that could be a really good offense.
So, I mean, the Broncos fan in me loves that you said Drew Lock. I actually agree. I'm on Drew Lock a ton this year because, like you said, well, and the thing was, like, there was a lot of question marks about his ability as a quarterback. We know he has fantastic arm strength. We know he has great arm talent, but he had lapses in judgment. He had bad footwork. He tried to make throws that he tried to be Patrick Mahomes at times, and it's just, he's not. I mean, he's got great arm strength, but he's not Patrick Mahomes. So, and so what I saw in those final five games was better footwork. Good. I mean, I thought he did well scanning the field and making the right decisions, throwing the ball. I mean, he only had, I believe, one interception maybe, but I mean, still the point is, and now, like you said, he's got Jerry Jeudy, who arguably one of the best route runners and arguably the best route runner in this class. Which we saw Calvin Ridley be, who was the number one route runner in that class, produce right away. And that definitely helps to have a great route runner because you can start beating those cornerbacks. And then KJ Hamler's just got speed, and coming from the slot, it's a lot easier to get guys from the slot. And then, I mean, that team is entirely speed at this point. Right. I mean, Philip Lindsay or Melvin Gordon's like the slowest guy, or maybe Cortland Sutton is at like 4.53 or something like that. Yeah. So I love what they're building, because they're building to be able to compete with Kansas City based off of, they have a good defense. They just need to get the offense. So I loved what they did this offseason. But I mean, it's just hard to bet against a athletic quarterback like Kyler Murray. I mean, he had over 500 yards rushing, showed that he does belong as a quarterback in the NFL. He does need to reduce his mistakes, but when you have the pass catchers you do, I mean,
they're going to be so hard to defend, because, you know, if you're running out four wide receivers the bulk of the time, like they did, nobody ran 10 personnel more than they did last year. You're going to be running against light boxes. And, you know, so that makes Kenyon Drake's opportunities better, which makes play action dangerous, which makes those receivers that much more dangerous. Then obviously when you factor in the RPO stuff, Cliff Kingsbury and some of his designs, like, I think that's going to be a very difficult defense to defend. When the schedule dropped, one of the games I was most excited about to see when it was going to fall was that Cardinals at Patriots game. Like, I am dying to see Cliff Kingsbury and his offense against Bill Belichick and his defense. Like, the chess match that week is going to be fascinating to me. But Drew Lock, I think, is in a very good position. I like a lot of what he did down the stretch last year. I think Pat Schumer might be an ideal offensive coordinator for him. You know, we saw what he did with Case Keenum. You know, you see some of the stuff they can dial up off of play action with some deep shot plays with Hamler and his speed. You know, you double or you shade safety help to Cortland Sutton at your peril. You know, especially if you're worried about the run game with Gordon and Lindsay, you can't play too high against them. So I think Denver is going to be a very good offense. It's just, if you had to pick between Lock and Murray as the guy to make that jump, I'll give the edge to Murray. But I think those are your two best candidates.
Completely agree. And then one thing I will never fail to mention this because of Matt Waldman, we talk about the big three wide receivers for Arizona, but people kind of forget Keyshawn Johnson, Andy Isabella, Hakeem Butler, who was Matt Waldman's number one wide receiver. Like, you have, you're like six deep of fantastic wide receivers there. So Murray's not going to run out of targets at any point. He just needs to stay healthy, and he needs to not take so many sacks.
Like, right. Yeah, he had 47 last year.
It's not his fault, because let's be real, Arizona's offensive line is atrocious.
Yeah, he's great.
Speaking of Matt Waldman, we did have him on our last episode, and he mentioned you two broke down Trevor Lawrence, and we're absolutely giddy about it. Now, not as giddy. He made sure to emphasize this. Not as giddy as when you guys watch Patrick Mahomes, which is a fantastic episode to watch because it's hilarious because it's Patrick Mahomes can do anything, and we've seen it. What are you seeing with Trevor Lawrence that makes you think he will excel in the NFL?
You know, a lot of it is some of the stuff we talked about, like the processing speed, the ability to diagnose stuff, the ability to make reads, the ability to look defenders off, like the things that you're looking for from a quarterback to begin with. But there's also the athleticism. And during that show, we were talking about sort of some potential scheme fits for Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, I threw out some of the things you would expect, like, you know, Pittsburgh, for example, and some other offenses. And Waldman said, no, I think he could run Baltimore's. Like, I think he's athletic enough to step into Lamar Jackson's offense and run it, you know, and he's not just a guy that has a little bit of lawn speed to him so he can turn like an open RPO or an open zone read into a big game. Like, he can set up blocks. Like, he knows how to like set up blocks for his guys in front of him, how to maneuver around defenders, how to set defenders up. You know, he's a nuanced runner too. Forget about the stuff that he does as a passer. And so, when you see the way the game is trending, like all the stuff we've been talking about, Sam, I think he's sort of like the modern prototype quarterback, like with what he can do with his legs and his arm. And, you know, I know we're going to talk a little bit about the 2021 class. It's interesting to see, you know, I often talk about the sort of life cycle of a draft quarterback because these guys get built up this time of year and then torn down. You know, we start nitpicking. It's what we do. Twitter does it best. You know, this time last year, like, look, Trevor Lawrence was lock solid QB1 for 2021. Like, no doubt about it. Then he got off to a bit of a slow start last year. There are some questions. Now we've seen Justin Fields. We've seen Trey Lance, who's getting ridiculous hype right now. I mean, Bucky Brooks and Dan Jeremiah just did a show on Trey Lance. Who's a, you know, he might not even come out. And you're seeing that sort of, you know, facade get chipped away at with Trevor Lawrence. And that's part of the reason why Matt and I wanted to do that show. We're like, slow down, everybody. Like, yeah, Fields is great. Like, Trey Lance is great. Trevor Lawrence is very, very good, too. Like, let's not start knocking this guy and dropping him down boards before, you know, we take a step back and realize how good this kid is.
563 yards rushing last year, by the way, for Trevor Lawrence, 9 touchdowns. So not only are you looking at, quote-unquote, traditional quarterback with Trevor Lawrence, but when you add that element of rushing ability, and it like you said, it doesn't need to be 4 or 5 speed. It can be 4 or 7 if you're setting up the blocks correctly.
What was the touchdown run he had against Ohio State, that like 65 yarder? I mean, just come on.
I remember it because it wasn't it like the first 3 games where he's quote unquote struggled a bit, but they were winning anyway. So I don't know what struggling means to people like Trevor Lawrence. He wasn't
flawless. That's what.
Yeah, right. But then he ended up with better numbers overall, and it's just like, all right, guys. Like at this point, like Justin Fields, great. Like athletic, I think he's a fantastic quarterback. But Trevor Lawrence, he showed it as a freshman, got better as a sophomore. So that's just one of those things where, all right, we need to stop being that nitpicky. Like, okay, we can be nitpicky on Saquon Barkley, but at the end of the day, do we really care about, oh, he bounces outside too much when he can hit a run at any point in time?
Yeah.
You talked about the 2021 QBs. We know Lawrence, we know Fields, we know a little bit about Lance now. Is there anybody else that we should be keeping an eye on? I know Ellinger there's some throws he can't make. There's some decision-making issues, but I mean, he's a gamer. What about like Newman or Mond or Morgan? Is there anybody that we should be watching this year that could take a jump up ranks that maybe we aren't considering?
Yeah. I mean, we always see guys sort of come out of nowhere, right? Like Trubisky came out of nowhere, like, and partly because he was a first year starter, but you know, as far as quarterbacks go, you know, I think Newman is certainly somebody to watch. I liked a lot of what he did at Wake Forest. I think he's going to be a very quarterback-friendly offense at Georgia. So I think the opportunity is there for him to have sort of a breakout-type season, particularly doing it in the SEC. You know, speaking of the SEC, we've seen now 2 different Mike Leach quarterbacks find homes in the past 2 drafts. Like, first it was Gardner Minshew. than Anthony Gordon. Didn't get drafted, but I think he's in a very good spot at Seattle to win a backup job there. KJ Costello, the transfer from Stanford to Mississippi State, you know, we might see another situation where he has a big year in Mike Leach's system, gets himself some draft hype. So he's certainly somebody to watch. Some other quarterbacks that I've been running through my mind. It was Costello. It was Newman. I do think Tanner Morgan, the Minnesota kid, is worth watching. Does some things well. Does some of the RPO stuff really well. Rashad Bateman is a tremendous wide receiver. Might even be better than Tyler Johnson was. And so you're going to be watching a lot of Minnesota as it is. So definitely watch yourself some Tanner Morgan. And then let's face it, 2 years ago, Sam Howell, the UNC kid. He's not draft eligible this year. He's playing as a true freshman for UNC. He's very good, but that's more a 2020 question. Working back to this class, maybe Kyle Trask, the Florida kid, is worth watching. But yeah, those are the names that are sort of circling around in my mind right now.
What about JT Daniels?
Yeah, he's shown some flashes. You know, I think he's somebody that I want to see a bit more consistency from, because it's just that right now. It's just sort of like flashes. And I want to see it sort of extended, consistent over a longer period of time. I can see why people are excited about him right now, though.
He didn't sign anywhere, did he? Entered the portal, but we don't really know where he's going.
I don't even know where he's going. Because that kid was so good.
Yeah. There's nothing really here. Well, I guess watch out for that.
Yeah.
We know you as a quarterback guru. I'm sure you know more about football than just quarterbacks. So let's talk a little bit about some fantasy football here. What underrated offense do you want to be most invested in 2020?
I mean, it sort of depends how you look at and define like an underrated offense. Like, you know, you could say, for example, take the San Francisco 49ers. Like, they were a top five offense in many metrics last year. They were, I think, number two in points per game, 29.9. I don't know if they're going to be as good, but I still think that, like, you look at what they're going to put together offensively, you know, and take George Kittle and put him to the side, because he's a different beast altogether. But you're looking at this offense. I think Jimmy Garoppolo is a good enough quarterback. Kyle Shanahan is a fantastic offensive mind. What he does to help Garoppolo is so effective. I do like the Ayuk selection. I think he's going to fit in that offense nicely. I think Deebo Samuel is a very nice receiver in that offense. I think Jalen Hurd is going to play a bigger role there as well. And so that's an offense I'm really interested in. You know, we've talked about Denver, you know, but that's another offense that I'm going to want to get involved in. I think that's an offense that was a bottom five offense last year. But I think it's not going to be bottom five for long. And, you know, you're looking at some of the names on that roster, some of the offenses, some of the skill position players there. I'd want to get some shares of, you know, particularly I think KJ Hamler in the slot. I think that's one. You know, on a team, another team we talked about, Indianapolis, Paris Campbell in the slot, you know, having Philip Rivers come in, run that sort of West Coast offense, you're going to see a lot of opportunities for those guys, particularly Paris Campbell coming out of the slot. So he's a player I'm going to want to get some shares of at some point. And I think, you know, it's going to sound like a bit of a homer situation, but with the New England Patriots, you're going to want to get yourself some of the running backs, some of those tight ends. Like, I think you don't want to look at the wide receiver position in New England, you know, because it's a huge question mark anyway.
Yeah.
But the two rookie tight ends, Devin Asiasi and Dalton Keene, Sony Michel, James White, like, they're going to try to, when they throw, make it easy for Jarrett Stidham. And so those guys are going to think, particularly James White and those two tight ends, they're going to see a lot of opportunities. You know, they're going to see a lot of targets coming their way. While I don't expect it to be a good offense, I think in terms of volume, it's going to run through those positions in New England.
Is Damian Harris dead?
I don't think so. I think he sort of becomes the new Rex Burkhead. We always thought that surprise veteran cut. A lot of people thought it was going to be Patrick Chung, but they just redid his deal. So now Rex Burkhead is pretty much like the guy that we're all looking at, those of us that cover the Patriots. He might be the surprise veteran cut. And Damian Harris would slide into that role where you'll see some scripts, some games where he's the lead guy, and then some games where he's not even active. Like, again, trying to predict Patriots running back usage has given me more gray hairs than I care to admit, Stompy.
Because just get the guy that catches the passes, and that's about it.
The only one you could really trust is James White. Right. I mean, the prime example of this was Jonas Gray, who had 3 touchdowns against Indianapolis on Sunday Night Football. Then that was it, because they like cut him because he slept through practice.
Steve Van Ridley. Cut for his fumbles.
I mean, it's just Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, the law firm. Like,
he is far and away. By the way, I picked him up like 3 years straight off of free agency, or maybe 2 years straight, because I think in back to back years with the Patriots, he picked up carries because somebody got injured, and then he started with Cincinnati, and I think I actually kept him for that year, but law firm is my favorite all-time player for fantasy football.
Yeah, I mean, but it's so hard to predict what they do with the running backs. That, like, James White is probably your safest play, but the tight ends, you know, they'll see volume.
I mean, you mentioned the ones that I would take. Another one that I think is going pretty underrated, Detroit Lions. If Stafford stays healthy, Galladay produced with whomever they put out on the field. Marvin Jones has been fantastic with Stafford. Hawkinson's a second year tight end. We'll see how, if they use him, but I mean, these are the times that you want to pick up second year wide receivers and tight ends after they had a bad first season. And then you have that two headed monster at running back. Anybody's guess how that's going to go? I think DeAndre Swift is going to, Matt Waldman said that Kerryon is the better running back. He thinks he's the better running back now in terms of injuries and stuff. That might be something. Right. So it'll be interesting to see the split there, but I have to imagine that they're both going to get significant touches. So I mean, that's another one that I think can be high scoring, especially because that defense is just not good.
Right. They're going to be a lot of shootouts. I think Pittsburgh too, you know, if Roethlisberger is healthy. Look, I mean, you got Washington, you get, you know, Deontay Johnson, obviously Juice Huster, you know, they added Ebron. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, especially if you're at a tight end bonus league, like say Scott Fishbowl, we expect it to be like Eric Ebron is going to get drafted pretty early in some divisions, I bet.
Yeah. I can't do it. He's got the 1 year and I just can't do it.
You know, it's going to happen though.
Oh, I know. Well, and it's weird because he used Heath Miller, but they've never really used tight ends there. No. So I don't, that is it for a 5-point inspection. So we'll move on to what most people tune in for. Let's plug in the analyzer and get this week's Dynasty Diagnostic. Our episode 74 roster was submitted by A1 at Let's Get It. On Twitter, be sure to give him a follow. If you want to be a part of next week's show, follow the podcast at Dynasty Diagnostic. Smash the subscribe button and leave us a review at the link in the description on iTunes and Podbean. All right, so for this roster, we have a 12-team PPR, 4-point passing touchdown, super flex. We start 1 QB, 2 running backs, 2 wide receivers, 1 tight end, 2 flex, and 1 super flex. We'll start at QB since we got the QB guru on here. We have Patrick Mahomes, Kyler Murray, Cam Newton, Drew Locke, Andrew Luck, and Will Greer. I don't even think you need to break this down, but go for it there.
I mean, what is there to say? Like,
he's like, you have
arguably the best.
Yeah.
You have the two guys we were talking about being MVP. And then, who knows? We could wake up tomorrow and Cam Newton's in Los Angeles.
Andrew Luck in New England.
I mean, look,
I don't even know why I put that out in the universe. We don't
put it out into the ether. Say it louder. Speak it into existence, Stompy. No, I mean, look, I think quarterback is fine. You might say, well, why are you holding on roster spots for Cam Newton and Andrew Luck? Well, we just saw Rob Gronkowski come back. Who's to say Andrew Luck won't get a similar itch? And Cam Newton, look, some team's going to pick him up at some point, you know, and
Understand. I don't understand how he's not picked up already. I mean,
no offense
to the Patriots, but
yeah,
isn't he better than the 2 options or 3 options you now have on that team?
Absolutely. I think with New England, it's a money situation. They just don't have the money to sign him.
Yeah.
You know, if they end up trading, say, a Joe Tooney or making some correspondent moves, I think you know, he would be a better offense, you know, a better quarterback for New England than the two guys they have right now. I think Pittsburgh, obviously, if Roethlisberger's hurt or gets hurt, like Mike Tomlin's on, you know, he's sending out the G6 as soon as he can to get Cam Newton. So, no, Cam's going to be on a roster sooner than we know. So, yeah, I think quarterback's fine here. There's no worries. Yeah,
you don't have to do anything here. I wish Will Greer would get a shot. I really do. We'll see. We'll see after this Teddy Bridgewater situation. We'll see. Yeah. All right, moving on to the running backs. We have Dalvin Cook, Devonta Freeman, Royce Freeman, Darrell Henderson, Alexander Mattison, and Bryce Love. Little rough there, Mark. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, look, Cook's great. But we were talking about starting two of these guys. I mean, we don't know how Henderson, that situation is going to play out with Cam Akers. I mean, the two Freemans, yeah, you need to – I don't know if you want to move one of the quarterbacks to get some running back help. You know, with that pick 1-1, do you want to go Cam Akers there? You get a massive hedge against Henderson? Like, that's an overpay in my mind. Oof. Like, yeah, it's not great. I mean, maybe you package the 3-1 or the 3-6 to get up into the second to get Cam Akers. Yeah, you need to do something here, man.
So I think – so, I mean, obviously, Dalvin Cook, we do have to worry about his injuries a little bit. But you do have Alexander Mattison, which unfortunately didn't get to see a lot of last season because he got injured at the same time. I actually like Bryce Love a little bit. Though Gordon's there now, so we'll see how that goes. But Bryce Love in a Mike Turner, Ron Rivera type offense, I mean, obviously not – see, he's not Christian McCaffrey. They did come from the same school. But, I mean, Bryce Love could be that Christian McCaffrey for that offense if he gets the shot. Now he was injured. He had a bad ACL injury, missed all of last season. They did draft Anthony Gordon, or is it Antonio Gordon? Sorry, Antonio Gordon, mixing up the Gordons here.
Mixing up the Gordons.
So we'll see how that plays out. But, I mean, that situation's muddy. So having Bryce Love there, and I would pick him up in drafts because he's going in, like, in, let's just say a 25 spot draft or a 25-man roster. He's going in the 20 plus rounds, and it's like, well, why not take a shot there? Because he very easily could end up being that CMC for that offense. But like you said, Devonta Freeman said he would be willing to sit out this season if he's not, doesn't get paid. So obviously that's kind of a dud there. You need at least two more running backs here. So the two things that I see with 101 or the QBs is either you trade one of the QBs, and get running backs back and picks, or you trade back in the draft from 101 to a QB needy team. Hopefully they have another early round pick. Let's just say 102, 103, 104, where you can get two of the top or one of the top running backs. I feel a little bit better, but then you still have to probably look for another running back somewhere else, probably with a trade. So yeah, you definitely need at least two more running backs there. All right, on the wide receivers here, Mike Evans, Brandon Cooks, Julian Edelman, Jamison Crowder, Mecole Hardman, Jalen Hurd, Russell Gage, and Andy Isabella.
It's a good group. Obviously, we expect Mike Evans to put up some pretty good numbers this year with Tom Brady coming in. Edelman's with a bad quarterback situation, but that Patriots offense – you know, I talked about the tight ends and the wide receiver and the running backs getting the share of the targets. If there's going to be a wide receiver that's going to get 60, 70 targets in that offense, it's going to be Julian Edelman. I mean, so much of that Patriots offense goes through the slot position. So he's going to see some targets. Jamison Crowder, you know, he had a ton of targets last year with Sam Darnold. So that's an opportunity situation there. I talked about Hurd earlier. I think he takes a step forward here. Isabella is in another advantageous situation. They're going to be running four wide. So there are opportunities there. Cooks, I've never really gotten on board with Brandon Cooks. I recognize the talent, but there's, you know, how many teams and how many years now? I mean, there's a reason he hasn't had it stick yet. So there's a question there. You know, I think you could probably find with one of those third rounders a guy that could contribute a bit, maybe like a John Hightower. Somebody like that, somebody that was probably a, you know, day three pick rookie, that's going to get some opportunity. Somebody might fall to you there. I mean, I think you need to, like, you know, shine it up a bit, but this is a pretty good group.
So you say good numbers from Evans. I think there's, I mean, it's a pretty divisive issue at this point with Tom Brady. I mean, do you think that he's actually helped by Tom Brady, or has Godwin helped, or both helped because they have a more accurate quarterback there? And then the other question is he able to deliver a deep ball necessarily as well as, like, say, a Jameis Winston?
I mean, I think Brady's deep ball is going to be good enough. You know, that I think that's an area of Brady that's sort of been, like, kind of misunderstood over the years. A lot of people really thought that, look, he's a system quarterback and so much of what they do is underneath. And that's true. Like, this is an offense that's designed to run near the line of scrimmage. But when he's had opportunities, he's not shy in taking them. And he can throw the deep ball well. It's just, it's not a high point in their offense. And let's be honest, like, I think part of the reason Brady went to Tampa was to take this challenge on. No, to play in a Bruce Arians offense, to show that he can do it. We know who Tom Brady is. Like, we just saw it this weekend. He was having a horrible match in that golf outing. He's got Charles Barkley, who's one of the worst golfers on the planet, heckling him, and he holds out from the fairway to shut him up. Like, this is a guy that's, like, driven to shut people up. So he's heard people like me and others say he can't be in a downfield system, so he's going to want to prove people wrong. I think Godwin, obviously, is going to be the Edelman type. He's going to have that slot option for him. But I think Evans will benefit as well. So I think Mike Evans is in a position to have a good year this year as a result.
Well, there you go. Kind of opposite of the narrative. I'm going to trust the guy who knows Brady better than – not better than Belichick.
I called this. I was on the radio in San Francisco after they lost to Tennessee the very next day, and they were like, where's Brady going to go? And I said, watch out for Tampa Bay, because he's going to want to prove to people he can run that offense. Like, maybe it's because we're the same age, or actually he's not 43 yet, but close enough. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But, yeah, I feel like I got a good read on Tom Brady because he's insane.
Well, you've also been studying him for basically
put that on a resume.
I'm a Tom Brady connoisseur. Yes,
exactly.
So basically what I'm seeing here is you need a wide receiver too. So Mike Evans being your wide receiver one, I think I'm comfortable with Brandon Cooks as my wide receiver two personally, because he moved to a vertical offense with a guy who throws, you already mentioned Deshaun Watson throws a percentage or one of the highest percentages of deep balls in the NFL.
Yeah.
That's what Brandon Cooks excels at. So I, as long as he stays healthy, he could very easily, in my mind, be a wide receiver one again. I don't know if it will happen, but I mean, Brandon Cooks has a high ceiling but a low floor, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I think you're more comfortable with him as your wide receiver three most of the time. So you need a wide receiver two. Jameson Crowder is going to be your PPR guy. Mecole Hardman's going to be your home run swing if you need him.
Yeah.
You already mentioned Jalen Hurd could be a significant part of that passing offense in San Francisco. So here you need a wide receiver two type, Tyler Boyd. Maybe like trade. I mean, if you want to compete this year, maybe trade for somebody like AJ Green, who's going to be with a rookie quarterback, probably arguably the best quarterback he's seen in a long time, though Andy Dalton had his days. An offense that can be built to be high flying with guys like John Ross and Tyler Boyd, AJ Green could be a very high flying offense. So maybe trade for somebody like an AJ Green that could be a wide receiver one for one or two more years. But so you definitely need to get one more wide receiver that you feel comfortable starting week in, week out. Finally, we go to tight end. You have OJ Howard, Dawson Knox, Blake Jarwin, and Chris Herndon.
Yeah, this is a group, like, I think you can make a case in an ideal world that this group comes together, but it's tough to make that case. OJ Howard, it's the Bruce Arians offense. We know Tom Brady still likes to throw to tight ends. Well, he just got his tight end in Rob Gronkowski, and you've got Cameron Brate there. Like, you might want to hold on to him in case he gets moved. You know, another tight end around the league goes down, maybe he gets moved to a more tight end-friendly offense, maybe. Dawson Knox showed glimpses last year in Buffalo, but with the Stephon Diggs acquisition, like, they're still going to be running it through Diggs and Beasley and Brown. So that's a question mark there. But Blake Jarwin, look, he's going to get some opportunities, I think, because you're not going to want to double any of those receivers, you know, with Gallup, with Lamb, with Cooper. So he'll get some favorable matchups, but he's option four in that offense. Like
maybe even option five
After Zeke. So,
or six with Pollard. So, yeah.
And then Chris Herndon, like he and Sam Darnold seemed to get on the same page at the end of 2 years ago. But the suspension, the injuries, there are question marks there. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'd hate to say again, trade one of the quarterbacks for a tight end. It's not like this draft class is going to help you, you know, because a weak draft class, weak rookie class. You might be able to get, you know, Cole Kmet at the 301. But even that, you're betting on a rookie tight end to produce, which is tough. So, yeah, I mean, this group, it needs a bit of love. It needs a bit of love.
All right. I can't say any more there. Like, we like Blake Jarwin before the draft, but now that you have CeeDee Lamb, who likely, I mean, he's probably going to be playing from the slot a ton. And we know that slot receivers, especially in this day and age, especially rookies, that's where you have the best chance to contribute. So, probably fifth, maybe sixth option if Tony Pollard gets some playing time. Howard just needs to get out of Tampa. I don't know, man. Like, I feel so bad for the guy. Knox is, I mean, it's a run for, or well, it might be a pass first offense at this point with the Diggs trade, but Knox is fourth option at best on that team. And then, yeah, you mentioned it with Chris Herndon. You just don't have a lot of good tight ends here. You had a lot of good tight ends. You thought, okay, O.J. Howard before Gronkowski comes out, sure. Or Blake Jarwin before the draft, sure. But it's kind of a bad tight end room for you. And then we'll move on to the picks, 101, 301, 306, 406. I'll just start here real quick. 101 in Superflex probably needs to be one of the two quarterbacks. I personally would be on Tua more than I would on Burrow. And I know that's kind of going against the grain. I just think Tua's ceiling's a little higher than Burrow. But because of the quarterbacks you have, I would be trying to trade 101 to get a wide receiver and a running back. Or trade back, so get like 101 and then maybe a second round pick or 101 and maybe a young wide receiver or running back, and hopefully have like 102, 103, 104, and maybe even 105, where you can get one of the top three running backs in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think moving the 101 should be priority one here. I mean, because it's going to be Burrow at two, and you don't need either of those guys with the quarterbacks that you have. And so you might be able to slide back, you know, if you want to go running back, you can get a Taylor, you can get, you know, CEH, which I think, you know, would be a very good pick at the running back spot. With the two picks in the third, maybe, you know, somebody, I don't know if you want to go Cole Kmet, Hunter Bryant, one of the tight ends, but you might want to look at that. I think Cole Kmet's probably the best tight end out of this group. Trotman I liked a lot, but he's behind two guys in an offense that's going to be running through the wide receivers and Kamara. And so, but you might be able to get a tight end that will at least contribute with one of those picks in the third.
So, as always, we diagnose these rosters as cars or tire rotations or new spark plugs or oil changes. So we'll start with our guest here. What kind of car and or what needs to be done to this roster to make it, or what would you be doing to this roster?
Well, I mean, I think that we're not talking about 11 here. I mean, I think this is a pretty good, like, recent model. I say a recent model, like a 2015 Acura MTX. Like, it's in pretty good shape, but you need to do some things to it. It's got some wear and tear on it. I think you need some new sneakers for it, particularly that, you know, tight end position. Need some new tires for this bad boy. I think you need a little battery issue. We got a battery issue here. We talked about that running back position. You need an engine, you know, some power behind it a bit. So we're going to take the battery out. We're going to put some new sneakers on it. But overall, it's been kept in good shape. That quarterback position, you know, the heart, the guts, the frame, you know, that's in great shape. So you're happy with that. And you've got some good options. This was a fully loaded Acura MDX when you got it. So it's been taken good care of, you know, it's got not a ton of depreciation here, but you do have some issues here with the tires and the battery and the running back and tight end position.
I don't know how to feel about this roster, so I'm going to make it a Nissan Cube.
Okay.
Like, I just don't know how to feel about, like, and we'll call it like a 2018 Nissan Cube. So it's like relatively new, still running well, like doesn't have any real dents or scratches on the outside, but it's just ugly. Like, it's just not a good looking car. And so what I'm seeing is, okay, it's nice and shiny. You got Mahomes, Kyler, Drew Lock, but then it's like, oh, but it's a Cube. And that's where the Dalvin Cook and the running back room comes in. And then you look at the insides and you're like, well, I mean, he's got Mike Evans, Brandon Cook. So it's not like fully loaded, but it gets you by. It's got Bluetooth. It's probably got Sirius XM. And then you get into the tight ends and you're like, ah, but it's a Cube. It's right. So bad looking. So it's extremely functional. And I think if you make a couple like Pimp My Ride type of things to make it look better, you know, from old MTV days and make it look better, maybe then I'm like, okay, I'm on board. I could see myself in this Cube. Yeah. But right now it's like, you need help at tight end. You need help at least one more wide receiver. You need a couple running backs. So what I would be doing is like that 101 is kind of that extra package that maybe like you don't really need, and they're just trying to upsell you. And with that 101, I would try to get a wide receiver, get a running back. And if you get a wide receiver and a running back, I start to feel a lot better. I'm not so worried about tight end here because I think you can get a tight end that's going to get you by, especially because this isn't a premium. If you don't do a couple things with that 101, if you don't fill in the running backs here, and if you don't fill in that one more wide receiver, you're really in trouble. So I'm on the fence where it's like functional car, but real, real ugly. And I don't know if I can, I don't know what to do about this roster necessarily. It's like, do I blow it up or do I invest a little bit more money into this and see what I can make, if I can make it look like a good car to drive for the general public.
Getting that Nissan sponsorship, buddy.
Yeah, there you go. That's going to do it for us here. Before we return the keys, make sure to follow my partner, Eitan, at Eitan Alive on Twitter. Wish him or I send him your prayers or your thoughts or whatever to get better. I'm at FF Stompy. You can find Mark Schofield where?
On Twitter, at Mark Schofield.
Oh, pretty easy. Is there anything you want to pitch before we get out of here there, Mark?
Not really. I mean, you can follow me on the old Bird app at Mark Schofield. We'll try to keep it sane on the Bird app. Doing a bunch of stuff this summer over at USA Today's Touchdown Wire. Doing some more stuff with Garoppolo, Cousins, Carr. Those are the quarterbacks I'll be studying along with the draft guys over at the Matt Waldman RSP this summer as well. But easiest way is on Twitter at Mark Schofield.
If you want to know anything and everything about QBs, go follow Mark Schofield. And he also has witty anecdotes and stuff on Twitter. So it's a fun follow as well. Please go to the Dynasty Diagnostic podcast feed on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating and review. It helps us grow the podcast, reach more listeners, get on to lists so we can get more downloads. Also go to our Patreon, patreon.com/dinodiagnostic, donate. This takes time and effort and equipment. And I mean, while we have it now, we may not in the future. So, I mean, if you enjoy the podcast, please support us. Also go to storeenvy.com, search FF Pod Shirts. That's Dynasty Outhouses, store on Store Envy. There's Trade Addicts shirts, sweatshirts, mugs, stickers. There's stickers and shirts for us, as well as Superflex Super Show, and I believe Dynasty Game Night. And I believe that is it. So thanks for making it to the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center today. Be sure to keep up with your scheduled maintenance and catch us next time to ensure quality performance. See you on your next visit.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the Dynasty.
Gnostic popped it. Now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold. It is rolling a roll that I'm told. Comp a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks. Yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks. Yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seat? Yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free. Yeah. Pop the hood. Tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this? Is it that? Is it picks? Is it bad? Do I even have a chance? Do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood. Tell me what you see. Pop the hood. Tell me what you see. Pop the hood. Tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. It's the dynasty now. Pop the hood. Tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the dynasty.
Diagnostic, gnostic.